We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Daily Draft brought to you by Badger State Brewing in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We are doing another positional primer today. I'm very, very excited to be breaking down what is, depending on, I guess, who you talk to, but what is, I think, a serious need for the Green Bay Packers, and that is more talent in the cornerback room. And I would have no other man on to talk about the cornerback group than former cornerback himself, Mr. Eric Crocker. Crock, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Good morning. We're recording nice and early here on the West Coast. How's everything going in Packerland?
It's all good, man. It's all good. We're pleased that you were able to make the time for us. And, you know, we've definitely chatted before, but for those of you guys that are just kind of new to the Daily Draft or Daily Draft is maybe the only time that you've taken in my content, just sort of explain, Eric, kind of who you are, your football background, and just kind of why we're talking to you about corners today.
Yeah. Played cornerback position. I had the opportunity to play at or, you know, be on the New York Jets for a short stint of time, but I was on the New York Jets for some months and whatnot back in 2013. Played in the Arena League as a defensive back, did well there. And, I guess I got into this whole thing. I'd say this is the fun part about content creating, talking about cornerbacks to the extent that I do now. I got into this with no thoughts of what was to come, but just to kind of educate people on Twitter a little bit about the position, because it's so difficult. It's such a difficult position to play. And I felt like the casual, I don't want to say the casual fan, but the diehard fans that are kind of casual as it pertains to the positions, I wanted to kind of explain what was going on to them. So I started off on Twitter. Nobody even knew who I was at all, really. But I would record like one-on-ones at Senior Bowl or record clips from a game when they would show the replay and they zoom in on the receiver and DB. And I'd explain exactly what was going on. And the more I did that, I feel like it started to take on a life of its own. And it turned into a lot of people kind of coming to me as it pertains to defensive back content. So it's fun. I have a great time doing it, coming on here, talking with you. We've done this a couple of times now in the past, and talking about cornerbacks, man, it never gets old. It's always fun to me, and it's always fun to hear the different ways that people see or view the position and how it kind of should be played.
So I've got a buddy. I've kind of wanted your take on this. I don't know if we've ever talked about kind of this statement you made, but I got before I was a married man, I had a roommate, and he had played corner for 1 year and safety for three kind of like you, had a cup of coffee with the, at the time, San Diego Chargers, and had said, you know, the corner position from a defensive back perspective is the easiest position to play mentally. It is the hardest position to play athletically. Is that kind of your vibe with it as well?
I would say it's the hardest position to play from a physical standpoint on the entire football field. Now, maybe a left tackle or something would disagree with me saying, hey, well, you don't have Nick Bosa or, you know, Za'Darius Smith and these guys kind of running at you and having a two-way go. But I'd say from just the pure position of playing the cornerback position, man, it could be difficult because, one, more times than not, people see when you mess up. So just from a mental standpoint, not the X's and O's part, but just dealing with the ups and downs of playing the cornerback position. I can have 60 good reps in a game, but the moment I have one or two bad steps and it results in a bad rep, everybody tells me I suck and can't play the position. So I said from that standpoint, it's definitely the most difficult. Being able to have a mirror match the movements of a receiver, not knowing where they're going, and they know exactly where they're going, and you're out in space, and obviously depending on the scheme, it can make it more or less difficult. So I'd say that alone right there is challenging. But he's 100% spot on when he says the mental side of things. And it starts to get a little bit more mentally challenging at the NFL level. But for the most part, at its core, the cornerback position mentally is probably the easiest. Because I got cover one, I got cover two, cover three. I know my responsibilities. This is simple. Not a whole lot to have to remember outside of watching film and seeing what coordinators like to do in certain situations, which your coach kind of X's that out for you. So, I think he's spot on. Safety, mentally, much more difficult. And as someone who probably should have made the transition to a safety, because I was, you know, bigger corner, 6'1", 6'2", around 200 pounds. It ran a 4.55-ish, you know what I'm saying, like in that range. I probably should have played more safety, but when I was in the league and I was with the Jets and I'm in those meetings and I'm listening to all the things the safeties have to do, it's like, dang, you're like the quarterback of the defense. This is too much on my puny brain. So I think he's spot on there with his analysis of the two positions.
And I like what you said about the kind of the exposure status too. Like I've always said, you know, a defensive tackle can have a trash game and like guys might not notice, right? A safety could blow his assignment six times, and if the ball doesn't get thrown there, casual fan has no idea that that's going on. Corners and tackles, it is so easy for fans to just be like, oh, this guy sucks, because if a receiver cooks you twice, they know it was you, right? And if you give up two sacks at tackle, they know it was you. So I mean, I'm with you 100%. Like the casual fan goes at corners and tackles constantly.
Here's a great example of this. It was Sugar Bowl or whatever it was a few years ago. Yeah, Ja'Marr Chase versus AJ Terrell.
Yeah.
Right. This is college football, LSU versus Clemson. And I thought AJ Terrell, viewing him as a prospect, because when you're analyzing a game as opposed to viewing somebody as a prospect, those are two different things.
Yeah.
So a lot of people ask me, like, man, what do you think about this guy? Maybe I watched him on TV during the season, but when I'm watching a game, as opposed to evaluating the prospect and breaking down the talent, those are two things. So I'm watching AJ Terrell versus Chase, who on my timeline, everyone is telling me, and I watched the game, but on my timeline, Ja'Marr Chase cooked AJ Terrell. I can't believe AJ Terrell is considered to be a first round pick. And oh my God, they're talking about all these bad things. But when you actually watch the film and watch those guys go at it, man, I thought AJ Terrell won just as many reps, if not more, than Ja'Marr Chase, right? Like, he made it very difficult on Chase. But what are we going to see? The deep ball where Chase creates separation at the top, catches the ball, runs it for a touchdown. Another deep ball, you notice those. But, man, what about the four or five pass breakups that A.J. Terrell had? What about on reps where Chase isn't throwing the ball and doesn't even get off a press? Or what about the times where A.J. Terrell is sticky throughout a route? And I feel like those are things that, again, when as it pertains to the position, you're just going to notice more of the big plays that happen against this guy as opposed to a lot of good. So there's definitely two different ways that you have to evaluate guys. You know, you could watch a game and get a sense of kind of things that you like, but when you're breaking the tape down and film, that shows you more of what's consistent. That's part of the reason I do not watch highlights.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you the last time I watched a prospect's highlight, because I think it's unfair to the listener for me to get my take off of, oh man, they do this, they do that. But then I watch three games in a row where, you know, the highlight is a compilation of, you know, 3 years in 4 minutes, right? Well, we're talking about maybe, you know, 10 plays maybe in 3 years of the career. But when you're watching a game, it's 70 plays.
Yeah,
I get a chance to see what this guy does consistently. You know, I think there's just kind of a difference there with how people kind of sometimes view guys. They tell me, go, Croc, watch this highlight, or Croc, watch this game. Well, why do I have to watch this specific game when I've watched this game, this game, this game, this game, and got a sense of who this person is?
And I'll tell you too, like we'll get to the actual show here as we approach the 9 minute mark, but it's all right. We love topping it up about ball. You mentioned like, yeah, it's 70 plays. And guess what? If you screw up six times and Ja'Marr Chase goes 6 for 105 and 2 touchdowns, you suck. And now AJ Terrell is one of the best, one of the best corners, in the league. So I'm with you there 100%. The one time I will check out a highlight tape, I'll tell you, on DBs, it's not usually the corner position, it's safeties. If I see a safety with a bunch of missed tackles, or I keep noticing him missing tackles watching tape, and then I kind of go to the stats and look for missed tackles, and on his highlight tape, he's just decapitating people, I'll write that down. trying to smoke people constantly has led to, you know, 18 missed tackles in his junior season. That's the one time that I'll check it out. I was actually doing that exercise yesterday because I was watching a bunch of Jaden Hicks at Washington State, the safety.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, not a ton of missed tackles, but more than I'd want. Does he try to smoke people? And like the second play of his highlight tape is him just absolutely laying waste to Braylon Allen, who is huge. I mean, the Wisconsin running back.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, he's headhunting. That's a tangent that's maybe unnecessary. All right.
Real quick, I don't want to put down anybody that watches highlights, like your right. fans out there, you want to get a sense of a player that you're getting, great. Like if the Packers, in a month or so, end up drafting, you know, Cooper DeJean, and we'll get to his film, and you want to go get a sense of kind of what he brings, and you watch highlights, man, have at it, you know what I'm saying? And you'll have an understanding. But from an evaluation or analysis standpoint, if I'm giving you the information, I can't at all go off of highlights. I have to go off of what's more consistent. Because if you go off of highlights and you watch Josh Jackson draft out of Iowa a few years ago to the Green Bay Packers.
Why do you have to be mean to me with Josh Jackson? Why do you have to be mean?
I mean, you'd see the eight interceptions. Yeah. Yeah. Wow, like he has such great ball skills. But if you had watched my breakdown of him, you probably would have been like, I don't know about this guy.
Should have played him at free safety. Anyway, getting to the Packers kind of state of the room. That's something that we do here on the positional previews. And look, there's different ways of looking about it. We had Justice Mosqueda on here to break down the edge group, and he doesn't think they need a corner. I think that's insane, right? But there's a glass half full way of looking at it, which is that Carrington Valentine, was a darn good player for a rookie starter, especially a rookie seventh rounder. I'm of the opinion that you don't let Carrington Valentine stop you from acquiring anybody. You know, if it doesn't work out, the value doesn't mean the pick, the free agent doesn't meet, you know, what we have in your mind for your budget at the cornerback position. Like Carrington Valentine is a fine plan A, B, C, D, whatever, but I'm not letting Carrington Valentine stop me from anything. People give Christian Watson a hard time, and I know this is something that Andy Herman's gone on about. Like Christian Watson's percentage of games played over the last 2 years is like significantly higher than Jaire Alexander's percentage of games played over the last 2 or 3 years. Josh struggles to stay on the field. I have no idea if Eric Stokes, like he wasn't playing very well when he got hurt in his second year. Fine rookie season, kind of like Karen Valentine, fine rookie season, first round pedigree, Georgia, freak athlete, all those things. Maybe he was never that good. And maybe you talk about what happened with his injuries. He might be cooked. I'm not saying he is cooked, but he might be. So talking about a seventh round pick, a guy that struggles to see the field in Jaire Alexander. And then Eric Stokes, a guy that may never be good again, was maybe never going to be good. I don't know. Now, all those things could work out just fine. And Green Bay could continue to kind of devalue the nickel position right now. Keyshawn Nixon is an unrestricted free agent. Granted, he is a back-to-back all-pro kick returner. Now, we've seen some potential changes with the league rules pertaining to kickoff. And if that starts to neutralize the kickoff return as an act, as a football play, I think Keyshawn Nixon's value decreases. I've been extremely vocal about never wanting to see another defensive snap of Keyshawn Nixon ever again. In fact, I've been super vocal about the Packers needing to start treating nickelback as a real position. I didn't like when they had Chandon Sullivan there and he got cooked. I didn't like having Keyshawn Nixon there. I don't like that they won't look at smaller corners that would fit at nickel in the draft, or they haven't looked at smaller corners that would fit at nickel in the draft. We'll talk about some of their thresholds moving forward. But I'm with Andy and on the opposite side of Justice. They need corner talent. I would add an outside corner and a nickel, frankly. I would have a, you want to call it a three-way dance? We'll call it a three-way dance. I would have a competition between Carrington Valentine, Eric Stokes, and another player at the outside. And I would replace Keyshawn Nixon, you know, absolutely. And frankly, like I said, Jair struggles to stay on the field. If Jair misses eight games again, well, now you're down to Eric Stokes and Carrington Valentine. And that's a scary place to be. It's not where I want to be. So in my opinion, corner is a need position. I know that's not completely a shared idea around Packerland, but I would say it is probably the majority. I think I'm in the majority in saying that Green Bay needs to sort of check out the cornerback position. Grock, can I get sort of just your overview of this class? Is it a strong class? Do you like kind of the nickel candidates? Do you like the outside candidates? What have been kind of your thoughts in going through some of these guys as far as you have gotten into the class?
I think from a nickel standpoint, there are a couple guys that are intriguing. I have to dive more into the kid out of Michigan, Sandstrel.
Oh, love him. He's good at football, man.
Yeah. Now he doesn't
little. He's little, but he's good.
I was gonna say he doesn't fit the Packers' threshold as it pertains to the size of corners that they like. But I'm spot on with you, where we're right there with each other in the sense of what the nickel should look like. For nickel, because of the position that they play, and we talked about the cornerback being difficult, really more specifically, the nickel has to be the most difficult position because you have to play in so much space. So you have to be more quick-footed. You have to be tough, physical, because you have to have run game fits, all right? But you have to be able to mirror and match guys in all this space. And you look at a guy like Sandstrel, you know, I think he brings a certain level of confidence, physicality. He has that dog in him. And he has really good feet and twitchiness. So, again, I try not to look at guys' measurements in 40 times because I don't want that to kind of trick my mind into thinking somebody is something that they're not. All right. So I try to go more off of the film and what that looks like. You know, is he being able to run with guys vertically? Is he being able to, you know, match guys and see that change of direction as opposed to having to rely solely on like a three cone and whatnot? But I think he's a guy who, if the Packers were to say, you know what, let's go with more of a quote unquote traditional smaller nickel guy, I think he'd be somebody that is intriguing.
It's so crazy to think that we're over a month removed from actual football and it's already the start of free agency. But despite the end of football, the action on the floor is just beginning to heat up. It's tournament season, the NBA's in its final push towards the playoffs, and there is no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. So that means it's time to get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks. There are so many reasons why Prize Picks is my favorite fantasy app, but my absolute favorite aspect is the fact that I can log in, easily make my selections, and submit my entry within 60 seconds. Prize Picks completely changed my football season and my overall enjoyment of the game. Now, it's NCAA tournament time, and I sincerely cannot wait to combine two of my favorite activities, March Madness and Prize Picks. This week, I'm already keeping an eye out for Damian Lillard three-point makes, Nikola Jokic rebounds, and let's just say I plan on making a ton of Caitlin Clark picks over the next couple weeks. The best part is that right now you can download the app and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. So download that app right now and use code PACKADAY for that first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A guy that you kind of wanted to wax poetic about, and I want to talk about him a little bit positionally as well, is Iowa's Cooper DeJean, extremely popular pick for the Packers. He would be, you know, if I were to say, like, okay, who's a realistic player? And I know, like, Pro Football Focus has him as a top 10 or 12 player for them. I have him inside my top 12. There are people that really, really think he can be an awesome football player. But there are plenty of other places that you look, and he is available for the Packers, and he's picked to the Packers at 25. So if I were to pick, like, one guy in this class that I think could realistically be there at 25, the player that I would pick would be Cooper DeJean. And for me, like, Cooper DeJean, I think if Green Bay is going to play, I'm not super high on his man coverage skills. And Jeff Hafley does, and Haf was with your 49ers for a minute. And you might speak on that for a second if you want to, but like, Haf likes to play man. Boston College played a ton of man. And if he's not playing man, he's probably playing cover three. And I kind of like Cooper as a cover three corner. That I think makes plenty of sense. Is his eyes, his ability to stay kind of locked in with the QB without going for hip fakes and head stutters and all that kind of stuff is impressive to me. But then there's, you know, a lot of talk about the versatility piece. I watched a couple of games from his first year, I think, as a full-time guy with Iowa, and he played a ton of nickel corner, which I thought was super interesting. He's a thick kid and a tall kid for a corner too. I think he could be hell on tight ends. And ultimately too, there's the idea, I know we don't have actual, you know, testing data because he did get hurt late in Iowa season. I think there's a world in which Cooper DeJean is an extremely, extremely good free safety as well. So if you don't mind, Croc, just kind of give us your Cooper take, where you think he might fit. Could he fit at multiple spots? Can he survive at outside corner? Because here's my comp for Cooper, and it's kind of a cheap one because they went to the same school, and we're talking about, you know, our team. But, like, I think he's Micah Hyde if Micah Hyde was, like, 20% more athletic.
Did Micah Hyde, he went to Iowa?
Micah Hyde went to Iowa. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I have my overview of him. All right. So I'll read that. And if you guys, you know, want to get into more specifics of my notes, we could do that. But my overview, pulling up on the handy dandy notes here. Cooper DeJean. We'll call him Coop. All right. Yeah. Coop is an interesting prospect. I like him as a cornerback, but don't love him. I think he's a smart, tough, physical defensive back that does everything right, but nothing pops. I don't think he's a twitchy, sudden change of direction cornerback, but can be versatile in zones and play man coverage with no issues running vertically with receivers. I think Cooper would be better suited as a chess piece / safety or nickel in your defense, a guy who plays safety but can also cover slots and tight ends. So that's kind of my overall view of him. Some of the things that I kind of noted, you talked about playing with his eyes. One of my first notes was Iowa's defense plays a lot of zone with eyes, especially number three, which is him. 95% of the time, he's vision-based in his defense. I think he has good feet when pressed. He's more of a feet before hands guy, so he's not going to be like overly aggressive at the line of scrimmage. But I think he works well at the top of routes when his eyes are right. When his eyes are not right, he can get stuck at the top of the route with his feet. Some guys naturally just have really good feet, and they can their feet can do things without even having to kind of think about it. Kool-Aid McKinstry, I posted a clip of him today where he was in like a press bail, then he man turned, and then he sat on the route. after all of that. And then you just see the feet, like he doesn't have to work really hard, doesn't have to use a lot of arms to get in and out of his breaks, but it's just so natural for him. I don't think Cooper has the same like natural feet as someone like Kool-Aid. Then I noted that there's a little stiffness in his game. Like he's not a super like naturally fluid athlete. I think he's an explosive athlete. And I think if you've seen clips of him dunking and things like that, you'll see that. But also with his dunks in those high school games, you'll see he's more of a power dunker, right? Like 2 feet jump power dunker. I think, as far as being like just a fluid dunker or like poetic guy, I'm not sure he's quite that. So just watching him even on the football field, there's like this just a little stiffness to where he's not as naturally fluid as some of the other top corners in this class.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's why I see him as kind of like a nickel, like a tight end matchup guy or a free safety guy. I don't think that like the long term, and by the way, playing those positions well, and I think you kind of view it the same way. I don't see him as, all right, you draft Cooper DeJean and it's like Cooper on the left side, Jair on the right. And that's just how you roll. You know, I don't think that's how it's going to work. Can you speak a little bit? And if the answer is no, it's fine, whatever. But like, can you speak a little bit to the new Packers defensive coordinator? I know this is going off script, but Jeff Hafley was with San Francisco for a long time, part of some very successful defenses, frankly, part of some very successful secondaries. Richard Sherman has had super nice things to say about him. Other defensive backs that were with the 49ers have had super nice things to say about him. What can you kind of say about Haf?
Yeah, you know, so when he was with the 49ers, and he actually lasted through two, maybe three regimes, he was just the defensive back coach. So going from defensive back coach, he ended up going to Ohio State, I believe it was, and doing some things with Ohio State. And then he left to Boston College and was their head coach. So as far as his style of defense, I'm not 100% sure because I never saw him like call plays or anything, right? Like we'll say Wilkes, and it might even be more difficult with Wilkes because he kind of ran more what Kyle Shanahan wanted him to do. But like Robert Saleh, if you were to ask me about Robert Saleh and the type of defense he would bring, or even D'Amico Ryans, like I have a bit more clear of an understanding of what he likes. Hafley, as a position coach, you're going more off of what the coordinator likes, and then you're just making sure that mentally your guys are able to go out there and execute the game plan. So as far as what he would ideally like to do, I'm not sure, but I do know you won't hear anybody that doesn't speak highly of the caliber of defensive back coach that he was. And I think what speaks volumes the most out of anything is him lasting through several regimes. Because as you guys know, and we all know, a lot of times when a new regime comes in, they cut bait with a lot of the coaches and they're bringing the guys that they like and that know and that they're familiar with. And for him to last through multiple regimes, I think that says, you know, this is a guy that, you know, people think very highly of. So I'm not sure exactly the style he would like. I do remember watching, there was some Boston College DBs the last 2 years that I watched, and I thought they did a really good job with things just in the sense of pattern matching, understanding concepts, being able to read the concepts from press alignment or off, having good feet, staying square. And I'm not saying that I just dove like super deep into it, but sometimes when I'm watching film on one guy, like I think I was watching the receiver out of UNC, Dyami Brown. Watching Dyami Brown, and I'm watching Dyami Brown against Boston College. Yep. And I just noticed how their DBs were playing. I'm like, man, look at this. Like, look at this leverage step. He's keeping his leverage. He's cutting. He's not allowing the receiver to cross his face. He's getting in and out of his breaks. Like, there were things where, again, I'm not watching the Boston College guys. I'm trying to watch Dyami Brown and identify, like, what he is and what he does well. But you couldn't help but notice some of the good tendencies that the Boston College DBs had. I don't know how big of a hand he had in that, being the head coach. You know, did he take a step back, have somebody else do those things? But I did notice, like, those guys – I felt like for a school that isn't getting the top tier talent, they had guys playing very well.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one thing, like I you go back to that, I think that 19 Ohio State team, and like he got everybody drafted and most of them turned out to be not that good. Like he got Jordan Fuller drafted. He got Sean Wade drafted. He got Okuda in the top five and Damon Arnett in the first round. And turns out maybe none of them can actually play. You know what I mean? And so the other thing that I'll say too about the potential fit there is. And I think a guy gets biased, right, when he watches his own team. But I swear the Packers led the league in just turning guys butt-ass wide open loose. I mean, that's dudes like miscommunications and just actual coverage breakdowns and just failures of passing one guy to the next guy. Green Bay struggled with that tremendously, where you would have in a key spot, sometimes even the other team's best receiver, just by himself running across the field.
One of my notes, and you guys might not be able to see it there, but the pros, look at that first note right there. Pros, smart, don't bust coverage. Won't bust coverage.
Yes.
So,
yes.
If that has been an issue with Green Bay, it seems like he'd be somebody that comes in and that won't be an issue that you deal with.
Right. Okay. Getting into kind of the threshold stuff, and this will be kind of my dojo. What Brian has liked, certainly learning from then Ted Thompson before him and Ron Wolf, we've talked about that a lot. What are kind of the things that the Packers prefer? Well, in general, they like 5'11 plus corners. Jair Alexander was a little, I think, below that, but like I said, in general, that is sort of the desire, is to be taller than 5'10 and 7'8", be 5'11 or more. They really prefer thicker corners because they have wanted you to sort of be able to tackle. That line seems to be 190 pounds. They like their corners to run faster than the 4.6 40, and they really like cornerbacks whose three cone times are sub 7. Now, we don't have a ton of that data. Okay. Right. So the way that the, and I'll just explain this because I've talked about this a lot and I don't know that I've explained it fully. The way that the combine has been run ever since it went to primetime, which whatever it's, I get it. They get good ratings. Like I make your money. I'm fine with all that, but they have shifted the agilities to off screen for the most part. And at the end of the day, so these guys are asked, and by the way, teams care. Like, teams really care. It's not just the Packers that care about these shuttle times and three cone times. You have done your bench, or no, I don't think the bench. I shouldn't say bench. I'm sorry. You've done your jumps. You've done your 240s. You've done all the positional drills. And then you get shuffled off to a different area. And at the end of all of that, you're supposed to run your best possible agilities. Guys don't run them. They're not running them. You can go look at the, like 40s and how long the list is, because the NFL website will list the fastest 40 at each position down to the slowest. Go to the three cone. It's like six guys. Go to the short shuttle. It's like eight guys. They're just not running agility. So when I talk about the Packers loving three cone time, it's just data that we don't have. A couple quick Packers fits, though, that have hit every single metric that we know about so far. We have Nehemiah Pritchett from Auburn is an interesting guy, and he hits the height requirement and the weight requirement and the 40 time requirement. We don't have agilities for him. Quinyon Mitchell is something else, and I don't know how much Quinyon you've watched, but
that's the guy I'm trying to find the film. I'm gonna have to have somebody send me. That's the kid from Toledo, right?
Yeah. Kamari Lassiter from Georgia didn't run and ended up 4 pounds light, but had an absolute freak show three cone time of 6.62. If he can run a sub 4.64, like if he has a mid fours 40, which I think is probably his bag, would be my just on watching him. At 5'11.5, running a 6.62 40 and playing at Georgia, where the Packers have taken Devontae Wyatt, Quay Walker, Eric Stokes, I might point you at Kamari Lassiter, Packers fans. Like I said, he runs at 40. I don't know how much Green Bay is going to care about those 4 pounds from 186 to 190, especially when they're not on like a 6'2" frame. He's 5'11.5. He can be a little, you know, a touch light. Other guys that have hit everything that we know about, Jerrion Jones, who's a super fun nickel out of Florida State. And I'd be very interested in his agilities because I like Jerrion Jones quite a bit. Max Melton from Rutgers, Bo's brother. Bo caught that touchdown against the 49ers in the playoffs. Max is 3 pounds light and hits everything else, but he's 3 pounds light. The other one, and this is if you're going to play some cover three, at 6'3.5", Kyrie Jackson out of Oregon hits everything so far. So those are some interesting Packers fits where we actually have, you know, enough info. Like the guy – like Kamal Haddon at Tennessee, well, he's 6'1.8" and he's over 190, but we have no other data. So I'm not going to pretend like you need to watch him because we have no other stuff. But but those guys, and Pritchett's interesting to me. I mean, I did not expect him to run the way that he did. And both Auburn corners, DJ James, although DJ is 175 pounds, that's going to be a far reach for Green Bay, but
Pritchett, I like him. He has some, versatility in him. I think he's a guy that can play nickel at the next level.
I agree. And he might have to, and he's got to prove that he can tackle then at that weight. The guy that's crazy to me, and he was my CB1, and really I haven't moved him much off of that. I like the way he plays. How much Nate Wiggins have you watched? Because he's got outstanding length at 6'1", runs a 4.28, and I was in on him before I knew he was going to run a 4.28, but 6'1", 173 is a stick figure. I mean, that's crazy, right? How much Wiggins have you watched?
Yeah, I've watched some Wiggins, man. One, the first thing that jumps out, you know, you watch a couple games, you watch the UNC game, you watch the Miami game. There are two plays in those games where you say, wow, okay, this might be my type of guy. Effort, right? Like a big part of it, like how much do you care, right? Like, do you care, effort, things like that. Obviously, you want guys to have the ability. Clearly, he does. But the effort to kind of go along with that. In the UNC game, could have just let the guy score. Literally chased him down, came from, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 yards back, ran past his teammates to get to the guy. Boom, punches the ball out right at the goal line. Ball ends up going out of bounds. He saves a touchdown. I love that effort. Did the same thing in the Miami game. I'm watching the Miami game. A running back burst through the middle of the field. He's off. Looks like he's just scot-free going to score a touchdown. And I had already seen the UNC game, so I'm like, okay, where is he at? Where is he at? Where's Wiggins at? Next thing you know, comes out of nowhere, chases the guy down from behind. It's almost like the LeBron James block when LeBron, like, it's like you're on the fast break and LeBron's on the court too. And you know he gets these chase down blocks all the time. That's Wiggins with these forced fumbles right at the goal line. This time a Miami offensive player recovered it in the end zone. But just from an effort standpoint, I'm like, oh man, like I love that part about him. Now, he's a little bit high cut, a little bit long legged. With how, like, his movement skills. I don't think he's, like, again, as it pertains to being, like, super twitchy or sudden, not quite that guy. But I do think he has good coverage, man coverage skills. I think he can be a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit more, play with, like, a sense of urgency at the top of routes, right, to really kind of squeeze and close that gap. I think he can do better with that. But that's something, like, I feel like I can coach up. And for me, I'm really big on what can I coach? What can't I coach? A lot of his physical traits, just can't coach. Like, he just has those things. A lot of things where I'm just like, oh, man, like, if he just focuses a little bit more closing and there's a little bit more attention to detail there, man, how much better would he be? And I see it at times. I felt like it could just be a little bit more consistent. As far as how I feel overall, he did play a lot of off coverage. I kind of referenced but he also can play a lot of press as well. But I referenced that UNC game. And the kid, we talked about AJ Terrell a little bit earlier.
Yep.
His brother. So first of all, with Nate Wiggins, I didn't know who the 100%, like, who the top guys are in this class. So I'm watching Cooper DeJean, the corner of the Iowa, and I'm watching him. I'm like, there's something missing. There's something missing. Let me go watch some of the higher end guys, like, and then come back to Cooper. So Clemson was what I put on. I'm watching Nate Wiggins. And 20... if I didn't know any better, I would say 20 is the guy that everybody's saying is a top prospect, like is a top draft pick. And 20 is AJ Terrell's little brother. And he was, I mean, just jumped off the film. It was an amazing watch as a cornerback. Like, if you want to watch a cornerback and you like him, you watch that of number 20. So I thought he kind of stole the show there. I never saw that in Wiggins, but I did see a lot of good. He did get bombed on in that game, playing against a good receiver. From UNC, but I thought overall running vertically with guys, I don't think will be an issue with him. There is a little Stokes to his game. I think that's a good way to put it. There's a little Stokes, and I think you guys obviously are familiar with Stokes and him coming out of Georgia. I would say their play styles are kind of similar.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about, but why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one?
Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
One little bit of good news, though. We talk about the Mikey Sainer still love. And I would say when you vert 40 inches, you can maybe make up for being 5'9 and a quarter. And he hits the 40, ran a 4.47, which I thought was a great time for him. And he did have that sub-7 three cone. So if Green Bay is going to if Green Bay is going to sort of agree to treat the nickel as its own position and not be super obsessed about height, weight, I think Sainer still hits the rest of their stuff. So and they need him. I mean, they need a player like him in a bad way. So that's a guy to look at. I'm going to jump in here and then we'll kind of get things wrapped up. My favorite guys in this class, and I kind of talked to Croc and you know, full disclosure, Croc basically said, like, I'm heavy on the top guys. So he's going to kind of talk about some of them. I've been deeper into this class. That's actually my position which is new. I've done a ton of for years on Packers specific draft guides. I've done a ton of wide receiver evals and I've done a ton of edge evals, a ton, and got moved to cornerback this year. And it's been an exciting kind of switch. Not something that I've done before. And I've been, like I said, it's been fun. So guys that I like a ton, Cooper DeJean, you know, I think, he's my 11th overall player, and I would guess that's a little bit higher than consensus. I think, though, as Croc said, I think a chess piece, but that doesn't mean he's not valuable. Like, Micah Hyde has been an all pro, and like I said, I think this is Micah Hyde with more athleticism. I mean, his instincts are that good, his eyes are that good, his give a crap is that good. Like, I'm very high on Cooper DeJean.
Love him as an overall player. You know, again, I said, yep, like him as a corner, love him more as a chess piece. So you bring up Micah Hyde, and I remember him on Green Bay and obviously what he's done in Buffalo. I think that's a terrific, if you told me you were getting Hyde in him and even with a little bit more, you know, explosiveness as a player, smart, and you have the return ability as well. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Have enjoyed again, Mikey Sainer still. I give him like a really, really high third round grade just because I think there's zero chance he does anything but play nickel. So, like, whatever kind of value that is to you, but I also think he's a 10-year starting nickel in the league. So, again, like, whatever value that has for you. And then the kind of later, quote unquote, later round guy that I find super interesting is Andrew Phillips, another nickel. Drew Phillips from Kentucky. He's a fun watch. There's a lot of really fun nickels. It's a good year to need a nickel. It's a year that hopefully Green Bay will kind of admit that they need a nickel and kind of go after one, because I had a ton of fun watching Jerrion Jones at Florida State. I had a ton of fun watching Drew Phillips at Kentucky. We've already talked about Sainer still. There are folks that think that ultimately Max Melton's position is inside at nickel. Mizzou has two corners in Rakestra, who really struggled at the combine, but in Rakestra, and then
what did he do at the combine?
What's that?
What did he do at the combine?
It was not great. Overall, I think he tested out as like a 40th-ish percentile athlete. So he ran a 4.54 and weighed in at sub 185 and did the broad jump at 10, which that is like a 50th percentile, you know, broad, like corners should broad more than that. Did not vert, did not run any agilities, ran slow and weighed in light. So it just, it didn't, that was not, I'm sure, what he was looking for, right? That's, and so I always kind of projected Ennis as a nickel and probably a darn good one because he tackles his butt off and he tries. But I don't know what to do with him other than to play him at nickel. So that was kind of my thing with Rakestraw. If you're going to run 4.55 or 4.54 at 183, 5.11, you're a nickel. To me, at the NFL level, you're a nickel.
And it's interesting, like, again, I watch the film sometimes. I don't know these guys' size, and I want their movement skills and ability to tell me kind of what they are. Cooper DeJean, to me, he came off as someone that was a little bit heavier with his movements, and then I find out he's 208 pounds. Oh, okay. Understandable then. With Rakestraw, watching him, I thought he moved like a bigger corner. So for you to tell me he was 5'11", 184, that's not ideal for his movement skills. You would expect somebody with that kind of height and weight to be more fluid and twitched up and have more 7 feet, more like a Kool-Aid, right? Like Kool-Aid is shade under 6 feet and, you know, right around like 200 pounds. But he moves like somebody that's 5'11", 184, which is good. Like you want to be the bigger body that moves better. And to hear that from Rakestraw, like I didn't know what his height, weight was, speed. I didn't know any of that. But that's very telling when watching this film.
And part of the problem is Mizzou lists him at 6'1", 190. So you're like, oh, he's a bigger, that's a bigger corner. You know, he's got some length, 6 foot. And then he gets to the combine. It's like, no, he's 5'11 and 3/8 with 32-inch arms. He doesn't have length. You know what I mean? And it's not like every corner that's that size doesn't work out. But again, if he moves like a bigger corner and he's not, screams nickel to me. Right. Any guys, Croc, that you've kind of watched where you ended up higher on than consensus? Anybody that you watch where you're like, I don't know why they're complaining about this, or I don't see that, you know, anybody that you kind of your guy at corner so far?
Well, I'd say right now, I mean, Kool-Aid has probably been my favorite corner that I've watched out of this class. You know, we've talked to, and I've mentioned him a few times, but just the feet, right? Like the feet first, to me, you see someone that just has natural feet at the cornerback position. I love that. I watch him in press. I think he's a scrappy press guy who plays with good anticipation at the top of routes, you know, and then I watch him in zone, right? I watched him on the goal line. Ah, I forgot which film I was watching, but I watch him on the goal line and he's in press alignment. So everybody, you know, they kind of get this part confused, right? When they see somebody pressed up at the line of scrimmage, that is press alignment. The act of getting hands on is jamming, which is a technique. All right. But so he's in press alignment and the receiver goes in, runs like a slant. He squeezes that, comes off to the flat route, reads it seamlessly, boom, makes a tackle for no gain. And, you know, just see a guy that is able to react with his mind as well as be able to react with his feet, even when he's not anticipating or then when he is anticipating. That's a corner I really like. And he comes off as someone who I feel like could play in multiple spots. What I mean by that is, you know, you look at Jaire Alexander. He's a guy who isn't the biggest guy, right? But he has that certain level of physicality. He has the speed. He can run with anybody. Man, I've watched Jaire Alexander play guys outside. I watch him go inside against a guy like Brandon Cooks, shut Brandon Cooks down playing in the slot, right? You can do all kinds of different things with him. I feel like that's kind of a Kool-Aid, right? Kool-Aid reminds me a lot of Janoris Jenkins. Now, Janoris Jenkins, he's somebody you probably didn't want off a whole lot because he started to have kind of these brain farts. But Kool-Aid seems to be someone who can play off, play press, play outside, play inside, move around, run with anybody, certain level of physicality. Well, if you give up a catch, whatever. Right? I saw A.D. Mitchell get him down the sideline, but the coverage was pristine. Like the ball had to be in the most perfect place and Mitchell had to make the most perfect catch, right? So a guy that's going to challenge guys at the catch point and can play in multiple spots and be played with a certain level of confidence with the ability he has, that's probably so far out of the guys I've watched, probably my favorite corner in this class.
All right, Eric, thank you so much. I'm going to wrap things up here with the question that we ask at each one of these shows, which is the Packers are going to pick once in round one, twice in round two, twice in round three. Shout out to the Aaron Rodgers and Rasul Douglas trades. They will have their own pick in round four, and then they will have a compensatory pick in round five because of the deal that Alan Lazard signed with the New York Jets. Shout out to Aaron Rodgers for getting his boy a job. Green Bay will pick 7 times in the first 5 rounds. And the question has been, gun to your head, do they take a player at this position with or before the Alan Lazard pick? The answer is easy. Yes. I don't think there's any way that Green Bay gets through the first five rounds unless they go out and sign my guy, Kendall Fuller, and maybe even another guy. But I think they're going to be heavier in the safety market than they are in the corner market. We were going to do this disclaimer and we didn't. Disclaimer. It's Thursday, March 7th. Okay. Eric and I are both fully aware that free agency is basically going to be happening when you get this episode. So kind of the team need aspect of this might be a little bit different, but if what happens, what I think is going to happen happens, and that Green Bay is more active in the safety market than they are in the corner market. And honestly, even if they sign one guy, and Kendall Fuller's my guy, because I think you play inside or outside and give you an upgrade at either spot, giving you more freedom in the draft. Either way, I think if they sign one upper mid-level free agent at the corner position, I still don't think they get out of round five without taking a corner. Eric, man, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it tremendously.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Folks, thank you so much for watching and thank you for listening. If you're on the podcast side, how can you help us out? Buy the Green Bay Draft Guide powered by Packer Report using promo code DAILY. That is DAILY, as in the Daily Draft, the very show that you are watching, for 10% off that Packer specific guide, which is going to be most excellent. We appreciate all of you that have already bought the guide. You can check us out at Packer Report, where the first month of VIP status is always only $1. Check us out. And if you like us, upgrade that bad boy to an annual and save yourself some money. Otherwise, you can follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter. I am at Ross Uglum. And do everything you're supposed to do here on the Pack-A-Day podcast. Like, subscribe, hit that bell for notifications so you are getting all of the Packers content you need every single day. Have a phenomenal rest of your day, folks. And go Pack, go.